The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why people can be so stupid and so brainwashed as to believe in God when there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever for his existence. Well, my friend, not only is there evidence for the existence of a deity, there is abounding evidence that he is in fact the God of the Bible, the God who incarnated himself, came to earth, and interacted with human beings by becoming a man himself. During the early years of the first century, this man named Jesus Christ, dying on the cross in 33 AD and rising from the dead 3 days later. Welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters, a place where your questions and objections to religion are treated with respect, but also challenged. And while I do offer evidence for the reliability of Scripture quite often on this program, every few years, for the sake of review, for the sake of context, I like to back up and talk about God with a capital G. In other words, does some kind of God exist? Not necessarily a God committed to any kind of religion. Without yet rushing in and committing ourselves to one of the world's religions, we merely ask if any creator exists at all. Once we establish the existence of some kind of God, you'd be surprised to discover how quickly we can move from the generic God to the God of the Bible, the God who established his covenant with Israel, who sent prophets, and who finally visited the world himself, the God whose interactions with the Middle East were written down generation after generation, finally bound together in what we call the Bible. On college campuses, I frequently attract attention to my outdoor open forums by putting up a large, challenging sign which says in big, bold letters, "Atheism is inconsistent." The sign is not intended as an insult. It is instead an attempted return to the rich heritage of universities in which different philosophies were constantly tested and debated. Debates can be done civilly, with respect, although I must admit that these days the appearance of such a sign looks unusual and provocative. Still, it does bring people around. Before long, I am confronted by that first brave soul, usually some confident-looking intellectual who is just ready to teach me a thing or two. And he comes up to the table with a half-smile and says, "Why is atheism inconsistent?" And then I respond, "Because nobody lives as an atheist. If we cannot live according to our own philosophy, the philosophy becomes questionable." And then he answers me, "Well, I live consistently as an atheist. I don't believe in God. I don't attend church. The Bible has nothing to do with my life." And I say, "Well, I believe you. I believe you sincerely think that God doesn't exist. I believe you live your life seldom, if ever, thinking about God. However, if God did not exist, certain other truths would follow. Neither you nor anyone else live consistently with the implications of his non-existence." And then he says to me, "What do you mean by that?" Yes, there are a lot of implications if God does not exist. There are only three possibilities that account for our universe. Any theory, scientific or philosophical, would have to fall under one of these three broad categories. Number one, it came about by accident. apart from a creator. That's one. That's A. B, it always existed. The universe was just always here apart from a creator. C, it has a creator or creators. Now, notice I said or creators. You all know me. I'm a Christian, so I don't believe in multiple creators. I believe in one God. But like I said, we're trying to back up, and we're trying to interact with an open mind with somebody. It is easy to assume with our bias that creation was the work of a monotheistic God. But to enter this discussion with an open mind, and my mind had to be open years ago before I finally came to conclusions and closed it. But if I'm talking to somebody with an open mind now, then I want to give him the freedom to keep being open. And obviously at that point, we must admit the initial possibility of several creators. For the sake of easier communication, however, we will refer to the idea of creator or creators with the familiar word God today, just to save time, and the familiar gender, he. Theories A and B would indicate that life is meaningless. Our intuitive and universal belief that life should have meaning had to come from somewhere. Even those who aren't searching for a general purpose to life think often about personal value. The very idea of such value had to have a source. Therefore, we can conclude that value and meaning came from a source outside of ourselves. Theories A and B do not account for such possibilities. For this reason, we are left with theory C. Some kind of God exists. Well, that's our show, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We're all done. I gave an airtight case. No. I'm going to elaborate, of course. Okay, let me defend this. People claim to live without a sense of God, but the real truth of the matter is that no one lives his or her life as if they were here by accident. When asking one time a skeptical science student how our beautiful and complicated world came about by mere chance, I was exposed to a very interesting answer. He says, look, it took billions and billions and billions of years. It only makes sense that things would finally come out right. I says, what do you mean by right? If life is an accident, there is no such thing as right, and there is no such thing as wrong. If life is an accident, what is just is, and all opinions about right and wrong would be just that, opinions. Ask yourself the following questions. Do you consider yourself to have personal worth? Do you attach importance to your life? Would you expect from others the same respect, appreciation, love, and acceptance that they would expect from you? Do you feel a need to discover personal gifts and talents so as to make a valid contribution of some sort? Would you be bored and discontent doing unfulfilled work? Would you be satisfied with mere survival apart from happiness? And finally, is happiness even possible apart from what I just mentioned? If not, then we stand in full agreement. Without personal value, life is chaotic. At the same time, if humans don't have a universal purpose, there is really no such thing as genuine value. Value becomes a mere invention, a hopeless dream. All that we work for, fight for, and stand for is ultimately unimportant. If we can't find this purpose behind life, the acceptance of a mystery is preferable to disbelief. Without such meaning, individual pursuit turns into vanity. We very much like to feel that someday, somehow, our experience will count for something. But without God, my friends, such an idea is nonsense. Why? Because there can never be a purpose behind accidental creatures. Just think, success, freedom, human rights, none of these virtues have any coherence apart from the notion that we are genuinely precious. So you think, well, maybe life is an accident. Maybe we simply create value to enjoy ourselves more. Why does one need to create value to enjoy himself more? If we really don't have value, where did such a preposterous idea originate? Well, Bob, maybe our thoughts of value were also an accident. Not everybody agrees as to what is important and what isn't. Well, certainly variations exist, but we agree on more than the average person takes the time to notice. The ultimate certainty for human worth is frequently ignored, yet obvious as your own thumbnail. I am referring to the conscience. The conscience. that inward reflection appraising all thoughts, all motives, and all actions. With unexplained intuition, people sense a responsibility to live with ethics. This is a firm contradiction to the theory of chance existence. If my neighbor is a mere accident, I owe my neighbor nothing. He owes me nothing. We are without moral obligation. After all, where would a mere fluke obtain the right to pass judgment? There could be no standard with which to measure his or her idea. Let us for a moment examine the obvious. Why would we consider it despicable to lie, cheat, steal, or murder? Why does one feel bothered over a selfish, inconsiderate decision? In fact, why should it be inhumane to walk out on the street and shoot the first person we see? Ah, come on. Of course it would be immoral to kill. What right do I have to shoot another human being? That's a very good question, my friend. What right do you have? But finish your question. What right does the victim have to not be shot? Does this challenge sound horrifying? Only because the worldwide condemnation of murder is outrageously clear. Now think for a moment and try to analyze the situation. What really makes an action good or bad? Once while sparring with an atheist, I said to him, if I were to conduct an experiment and steal that pencil out of your hand, I could actually defend my move on the basis of logic alone. In fact, it would be impossible to condemn the theft by way of a proven standard. Oh, you will, of course, tell me how wrong it is to take what belongs to another. But such declarations flow from mere assumption. Could I not question your starting point? Why is it wrong? He says, well, it's wrong because stealing is against the law. I said, yeah, but people willingly chose to establish those laws. Remember, moral suppositions existed before the law was invented. As another person here by accident, no better and no worse than anyone else, I challenge those prepositions, those presuppositions. No, the law will not do. I will need a better reason if you want your pencil returned. Well, law or not, everyone knows it's terrible to steal. How do we know? The argument of everybody says so can lead to frustrated, circular reasoning. Yeah, but these people are bearing witness to an obvious truth. Stealing is wicked and corrupt. Well, my friend, all you're saying is that stealing is evil because stealing is evil. Again, this is not an answer. Okay, well, here's a reason we should respect our fellow man. Why should we respect our fellow man? Because people have rights. On what authority do we assume that people have rights? Do you see my point? We could go on for days and never get anywhere. Some of life's most basic facts are really subjective, unexplained feelings. This does not mean that the feeling is imaginary or mistaken. Not at all. We don't ignore our sense simply because it can't be analyzed. We'll be right back.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm providing today what I call the moral argument for the existence of God. And it begins by saying that whether people believe in God or not, they live as though he exists. They don't think that consciously in their mind, but they live as though their lives have value and purpose. And one of the evidences for that is that there's this conscience which says we have human rights. Now, to live consistently as an atheist, one must admit that all morals are invented. That's the way it would be if atheists were correct. One must deny the validity of a universal moral standard residing in every conscience. In short, one must become a moral relativist. But moral relativism is quicksand. Nobody can live that way, at least not consistently. Sometimes a philosophy sounds clever in the classroom, but I guarantee you, as soon as that student walks out the door of his classroom and finds that his bicycle has been swiped, he no longer feels so sophisticated about the origin of ethics. I usually meet moral relativists in the context of religious discussion. Sooner or later in our conversation, they express concern about religious hypocrisy. And they're absolutely correct. There's been a lot of religious hypocrisy, a lot of it in the name of Christianity. But I always like to ask this question. Are you morally outraged by religious hypocrisy? When they answer yes, I say, well, how can that be if there is really no such thing as morals? Forgive me for using more graphic and horrible examples. Has someone broke into your house and murdered one of your loved ones right before your eyes? Would you say to yourself, well, it's one accident to another. I guess I can't be dogmatic here. In my opinion, what this person did was wrong, but since that's only an opinion, who am I to judge? I don't think you would react that way, but such would be the consistent reaction of a moral relativist. The last time you read in the papers that a woman was raped, did you think deep inside, oh, clearly that rapist had a different set of values than me? Oh, well, I know this would sound like a joke if it weren't such a disturbing illustration. Of course you didn't react that way at all. You cried out with indignation. You said this evil person must be brought to justice. Whether you're religious, whether you're an atheist, that's the way you reacted. I've never even met you. I know that's the way you reacted. But there is no logical explanation for the conscience. An action is wrong simply because it is wrong. That's all we know. Further information has never been needed to persuade us of the right decision. Looking only at ourselves, we come face to face with the most baffling mystery. This is where a creator moves easily into the picture. Perhaps our joint intuitive sense of judgment and accountability finds origin in a being who will literally hold us accountable. It would be difficult not to at least consider this possibility. The illogic of morality as an end in itself takes on a whole new light when we consider a probable source. We are now drawn back to a closer examination of the creation accident question. The conscience will immediately condemn any individual who fails to treat his fellow man with love and respect. This awareness of due respect supports the certainty of human value. We already established that value could not be authentic apart from a universal purpose. Simple as it sounds, we have stumbled upon a path for the searching soul. One can easily move from morality to value to purpose to a God who established this purpose. Now, somebody out there right now is going, hold on, hold on. This is sliding by just a little bit too fast. Let's back up a minute. The conscience seems to be your focal point here. I can concede the likelihood of God if there were no other explanation for morality, but many people pose plausible ideas for the birth of standards. Yes, they do, my friend. The general humanistic explanation is commonly called the wolf pack theory, and I'm very familiar with it. The theory goes something like this. A long time ago, society learned that in order to survive, it would be mutually beneficial for people to treat one another with consideration. Laws were introduced in the event that some individuals did not wish to reciprocate. In other words, mere convenience is mistakenly called morality. It's not that I sense any inherent value in humans, it's just that I treat you well in the hopes that you will do the same to me. The conscience is a habitual system of thoughts derived from the wolf pack. All right, now this theory can be easily tested. First of all, those who appeal to the explanation frequently do so for the purpose of excusing some alleged sins. They're thinking, well, since morality isn't real, I'm entitled to develop my own rules. You therefore have no right to judge my actions. But if it is wrong for me to judge, then there is such a thing as wrong. With the same breath in which morality is questioned, morality is confirmed. Another problem with the wolf pack theory is that frequently people do convenient things at other people's expense. They still feel guilty. Where did the guilt come from if self-interest and convenience are supposedly the whole reason we even have standards to begin with? It's easy to talk about cavemen and the origin of laws, but the truth is I have only the experiences of my own life with which to decide what is right or wrong. Supposing you were undercharged $10 by the cashier at a grocery store. You know that it will not be considered until the end of the day when they total the register. You will not be caught. You can get away with this. What is the convenient thing to do? The convenient thing is to keep the money, of course, but would this decision make you feel guilty? If so, how do you explain your guilt? You think, well, brainwashing could explain the guilt. It may be that people feel bad for simply acting contrary to the very way they were brought up. The origin of this standard is something they never questioned. All right, well, people who ask for evidence of a God usually consider themselves to be free thinkers, and I agree with them. This sudden about-face insinuation that they are actually brainwashed is most interesting. After all, once we realize we were brainwashed, we are not brainwashed anymore. Therefore, we should be able to dismiss the voice of our conscience and sleep well at night. Try to imagine yourself keeping that money from the grocery store. You know you're not going to go to jail because they're not going to catch you, but can you do that without guilt? The guilt should not be there. Supposedly, you were just brainwashed into believing it is wrong to rip people off, and you had now risen above such a decision. Well, yeah, Bob, but some people do commit crimes without any feelings of remorse. Yes. That is correct, and there is a name for such people. We call them psychopaths, implying that there is something terribly wrong with their minds. A psychopath is one with a warped or broken conscience. Calling something broken is not the same as implying that it doesn't really exist. The very label, psychopath, demonstrates that people really do see the conscience as something genuine, but malfunctioning in a particular case. Likewise, some are born without an ability to walk, but we don't take that to mean that legs are only imaginary. But we'll do more of this very interesting argument when we return to the Bob Segal Show. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connors' strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
True belief if there wasn't a God, and the evidence for that is the conscience. But people try to explain the conscience apart from God, and they don't do a very good job. And what I'm doing is I'm breaking down and showing the fallacy of explanations apart from the conscience, apart from God. But here's one that people like to point out. Many people who have a conscience are still living immoral lives, my friend. That is the greatest argument that we didn't invent our moral standards. If we were going to invent something, wouldn't we invent something we could live up to better? Ever since the traceable beginnings of history, the world has known war, crime, greed, hatred, and bloodshed. Our technology has improved, but our nature is barbaric as ever. For a while, it was popular to believe that our species was evolving into a more civilized, compassionate being. The Nazi Holocaust completely obliterated this fantasy. It made Nero's Rome look like a picnic by comparison, and yet it happened in the 20th century. People representing every range of career, personality, age, and social class performed deeds that stunned the world. The world should not have been shocked. When the pressure is turned on, man's true nature erupts to the surface like deadly molten lava. People experience a wickedness which they never thought possible. Those who live in a peaceful environment can easily submerge this evil side, but the evil still remains. Even in everyday life, we see people making selfish, callous decisions all the time. Well, the conscience tells us not to behave that way. This suggests that the conscience is coming from some entity outside of ourselves. Yeah, but Bob, isn't it true that different societies produce different morals? Yes, but almost every single culture at least agrees that people should be treated with respect. This is the one moral which is universal. For example, in some Middle Eastern countries, it is considered polite for dinner guests to burp after a meal while still sitting at the table. In America, that would be considered impolite. What's interesting is that both cultures agree that people should be polite. Yeah, well, what about racist organizations? Or there's older society which corporately enslaved others. Here, we do not even see the standard of respect. My friend, they weren't obeying the standard, but the standard to respect people still existed. What we saw was a redefinition of the term person, or at least good person. when slavery or any other human evil is justified, some kind of rationalization occurs. Hitler succeeded in recasting the Jews as villains before persecuting them. He assumed that such propaganda was necessary. He did not assume he could just go out and kill Jews for no reason at all and have nothing to answer for. African Americans were labeled as subhuman by many in the pre-Civil War South. Why? Because for wealthy slave owners to admit that all people were the same would be to immediately admit that slavery was evil. Humans are notorious for figuring out ways to disobey their consciences. It is true, however, that certain types of brainwashing do occur when rationalization is taught. Mark Twain illustrated this truth brilliantly in Huckleberry Finn. Young Huck, because of his background, felt guilty for helping his slave friend Jim escape down the Mississippi because he had always been taught that to assist a runaway slave was wrong. At the same time, Huck knew that he would feel guilty for refusing to help poor Jim. What was confusing for a young boy need not be a mystery to us. We see the brainwashing of a cruel slave trading society against the accurate, natural principle of love and kindness. Granted, individuals are exposed to contradictory influences in a large panorama of teaching, but this antithesis, at the very best, would create neutrality. We add to this neutrality a rebellious period in which children question most, if not all, of their values. The rebellion is generally followed by a more mature time of inventory. People ultimately pick and choose. A specific selection is made concerning which standards will remain or disappear. There must be some underlying feeling on which the choice is based. If a woman agrees that lying is wrong, there was something in herself that provided a comparison. Meanwhile, let me bring attention to the fact that our very condemnation of certain evil societies also argues against the wolf pack theory. For according to moral relativists, whatever a society decides to do cannot be questioned. Why then do we morally renounce the gladiatory games of ancient Rome or the slave-based economic system of the pre-Civil War South? Are we not assuming a universal standard which transcends culture? I once asked this question to a student who claimed that the conscience was a human invention to help society function. I said, okay, so then you have no problem with the early slave states, for they got together as a culture and decided there was nothing wrong with owning other human beings as property. In fact, the institution of slavery was very convenient, not for the slaves, but it was certainly convenient for the slave owners. It boosted the prosperity of the South. Well, wanting to be consistent with his earlier point, the student finally said, I suppose that would be true. I said, so let's be clear. Let's make sure there is no misunderstanding. Are you saying, for the record, that there is nothing wrong with slavery so long as the society agrees that there is nothing wrong with it? Oh, you should have seen him sweat and hesitate. Finally, he says, I guess I am saying that. I said, I don't think you really feel that way. You are claiming so now to win an argument, but if we had met in a different context and we were merely discussing racism or politics apart from philosophy, there is no way you would assert that slavery can be justified in any situation. This is Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect.
I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points.
Skyline Church.
Case that the conscience points to God, that we can't really explain the conscience apart from God. And a student is telling me, yes, we can. It's called the Wolfpack Theory. What we're mistakenly calling right and wrong is just society. Certain societies get together and they agree as to what is right or wrong. And whatever they agree to, and we're in no position to judge them. He's trying to be a moral relativist. And so right before the break, I was telling him that I don't think you really believe that. I think if we were meeting earlier and we were just talking not about religion and philosophy, but if I just asked you your opinion of slavery in the South, you would say that it was wrong. And he tried to insist that, no, that's his opinion. I said, okay, let's try an experiment. You're on your way to class. I want you to ask the professor for just 1 minute of class time before the lecture begins. I want you to look your fellow students in the eye and say to them, without telling anyone about the context of our conversation, I just want all of you to know something about me. I do not believe there was anything wrong with slavery in the pre-Civil War South because a certain culture had made a decision about morality, and I believe we should respect the varied opinions of all cultures. Would you be willing to give that announcement? He looked at me for a second, and then he said in a very cocky voice, yeah. Yeah, I'll go say it. I said, okay, I'll be out here tomorrow with this same table at 1 o'clock. If you come back and tell me you made that statement, I won't call you a liar. I'll believe you. We made the appointment. I never saw him again. I will eat my hat if he made that statement. He discovered that day that he did indeed believe in the value of people, a value which would be impossible if life were an accident. So right now somebody's thinking, okay, I agree that life would have no real meaning if we are accidental, but what about theory B? Supposing the universe is eternally existent with a meaning inherent in itself. After all, people refer to God as eternally existent. If God's meaning can be eternal, why can't the same be true of our universe? All right, fair question. Let me ask you some questions. Would a timeless existence apart from God explain the conscience? Not at all. My friend, rules do not float around the godless universe like alphabet soup. Ethics are not interwoven with inanimate objects or chemical reactions. There can be no such thing as a mindless moral principle because morality is bound up with personality. It is a running commentary on how personalities interact. Speaking of human personality, it contradicts the idea of an eternal godless, impersonal universe. Personality had to come from somewhere. Something had to always exist. You can't get something out of nothing. No one will argue that point. It doesn't take much stretch of the imagination to conclude such an obvious truth. Now then, if something had to always exist, this something had to be a thinking, feeling, sentient personality. If not, we would be at a loss to explain where personality came from. Well, personality could have evolved. My friend, evolution is only an unproven theory. Even if the theory is credible to you, consider the fact that there are many theistic evolutionists, scientists who believe that for things to be constantly evolving from a lower order to a higher order, some type of supreme being must be ushering life along according to a strategy. Charles Darwin himself believed in God and did not write Origins of Species to disprove God's existence. But if you are talking about an evolution that moves according to randomness and chance, we have a serious problem. Whatever the theories as to how many billions of years it took, you are still claiming that ultimately the personal came from the impersonal. That makes no sense according to any logic I ever heard of. Also, an impersonal universe would have no meaning, leaving human life once again as an accident. Well, maybe we're all part of some eternal consciousness that is merely part of the universe. Well, one would ask how finite people received an eternal nature and entered an eternal universe. All human beings have origin as well as death, two obvious mortal qualities. If we want to suggest that the first human beings did not have parents, we are either affirming that they were created or suggesting that they themselves were without a beginning. Either way, we have brought a God back into the picture. At the moment, we're trying to imagine life without that possibility. Okay, Bob, okay, well, maybe not eternal people, but perhaps an eternal underlying force of some sort. Maybe this unseen power holds the universe together and supplies meaning. Yeah, I've seen Star Wars too. Look, we would at once ask if this power has feeling and intellect. If not, where did feeling and intellect come from? We are suggesting chaos and accident again. A power that arranges things must do so according to a plan. Without the plan, there is no point to the arrangement. With the plan, we are back to a personal power, a creator of some quality. Let's face it, it really makes no sense to leave out God when discussing the meaning of life. Well, yeah, but many people seem to live sensible lives without even thinking about God. That is quite true. People frequently take the heavy questions for granted and concentrate instead on surface living. I once asked a college student if he ever thought about the meaning of life on a deeper level than school, work, or socializing. He responded by saying, well, what else is there? Hey, the ability to ignore a question does not invalidate the answer. Okay, well, Bob, all this does is make an argument for some kind of God. That doesn't mean he's the God of the Bible. Well, a good case can be made for the biblical God, but only after we establish God's nature. When doing so, we will conclude that God, whoever or whatever he is loving and good. Loving and good? Didn't you leap to that conclusion rather hastily? Well, we learn about an artist from his artwork. Does it not make sense that creation would tell us a few things about God? How can we explain any noble qualities apart from the source of life? You think, oh, but now you will checkmate your own argument. You stated earlier that we do not completely submit to our standards. Does our evil come from God as well? That is an excellent question. Man observes good and evil in himself and good and evil in the world. Life appears to be a paradise invaded. The world is both a wonderful place and a terrible place at the same time. On one hand, we can enjoy beautiful lakes, lavish forests, and breathtaking sunsets. Unfortunately, we also witness blizzards, earthquakes, and fatal diseases. This contradictory tension is equally apparent in the human species. Just as people love and create, they hate and destroy. Quite a riddle indeed. Some would assume from this phenomenon that God is not totally good. Such a conclusion is very understandable, but the theory does not completely hold up. Remember, our conscience and intuition tells us that people should be good and that life should be good. Can we assume that we are better than our Creator? Of course not.
This is Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Hi, this is Dana Wright here to announce that Bob Siegel has finally entered the 21st century. It had to happen sooner or later. Now, Bob's popular book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, is available in ebook format and can be downloaded to your Kindle or Nook. Whenever Bob speaks, people are eager to purchase this book afterwards. But sometimes parents inform him that their kids will not read anything that they can't put on an e-reader. Well, now that is no longer a problem. So if you want a book that can help everyone in your family offer better answers to good, skeptical questions that people ask about Christianity, go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com for I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel, now available for download as an ebook.
Siegel Show. We have Tim on the line. Tim, welcome to our program.
Bob, I always call too late in the show. You know,
well, call earlier.
I will next time. I apologize. Okay, so I'm going to get through this as quickly as I can because you're, we got limited time. First of all, evolution. To characterize it as an unproven theory is, I think, is not consistent with the science. All theories in science are provisional. All of them. None of them are proven.
Okay. Okay. But yes, fine. We can phrase it that way. And by the way,
it's not phrasing. That's the reality of science.
Okay.
That's how science works.
But if that's the reality of science, then we still need to admit that it's provisional. Isn't that true?
Yes, just like the theory of gravity is, atomic theory, quantum theory, germ theory.
Well, no, but there are theories that have more evidence than others, okay?
That's true.
By the way, I do accept microevolution. I didn't qualify that, but I've qualified it many times before on the program. You've probably heard me make that qualification. Microevolution is observable. Macroevolution, we should be seeing all kinds of fossil records. But even so, Tim, the only point I was making is there are even a lot of scientists who accept macroevolution, but they believe that some kind of God started the evolutionary process. So I think the much bigger question is, even if we want to accept that, the idea of things evolving from a lower order to a higher order is pretty incredible. And many evolutionists themselves have completely admitted this. That's the point I was making on the program.
Everything in science is beautiful that way. It's the idea that first of all, macroevolution is incredibly well supported. Just like gravity is a fact, evolution is a fact. Macroevolution, so-called macroevolution, is a fact. The theory is not debating whether it happens. The theory is the mechanism of how it happens.
No, I'm sorry. There is also debate about whether or not it happened. We should see all kinds of fossils of missing links. And we have...
We see them.
Very few that have been put out there. And I've even read books by macroevolutionists themselves who have doubted those fossils, Tim. I've studied this. It's not as conclusive as you're trying to make it out to be at all.
It's provisional, just like is so many things are provisional. But
it's a lot more provisional than some other things. But again, the point I'm making is that that would happen, even if that happened, even if I gave you that, the idea that that would happen by randomness and chance. That's the point we're keying in on today's program.
Well, okay, so randomness and chance is only a portion of evolutionary theory. It's not what evolution is all about.
The moment we take randomness and chance away from it, it's very hard to explain it apart from some kind of God. Because if you take a look at our molecules, you take a look at our DNA, it has information in it just like a computer. How can you have information without some sentient being that provided the information? Information that's actually telling something how it's going to develop, predetermining it ahead of time. That smacks so much against randomness and chance. It's incredible.
Look, first of all, it's not random and it's not chance.
Well, you keep saying that, random, but if you keep saying that, but if you take God out of it, that's exactly what it is. Okay, go ahead.
Randomness deals with genetic mutation through reproduction. That's the randomness of it. The selection process and other natural processes are not random at all. Not random in the least. They may not be directed to a particular goal that is 100% not random whatsoever. And nature selects for particular adaptive qualities. And this is incredibly well documented in the literature.
Does this include the belief in DNA? Because the minute you bring DNA into it, you're presupposing information. That's what I keep seeing people skate around.
Now, all right, DNA, first of all, the great thing about DNA is that we can see it in ways that we never could before. We can actually see where these mutations occurred by looking at DNA that's tens of thousands of years old. So, I mean, and these are huge DNA differences. You can see where we see DNA differences where certain things happened in our common ancestors with other primates.
Well, again, within micro, I'm accepting the mutations. There is still something in the DNA that's enabling that to happen. There's also something in the DNA that allows animals to adopt in other ways. The chameleon lizard is able to change to the color of its surroundings. Isn't that kind of an incredible coincidence that its DNA does something to protect it?
It's not coincidence at all. It's adapted to do that. You're putting the cart.
But there's something inside of us that has this natural ability to adopt. I think we're both agreeing on that. And that's what the element that I'm saying could not exist apart from some predetermination from the beginning.
The DNA is not trying to adapt. That's not what's happening. That's not how evolutionary theory proposes to work whatsoever. This is not the concept of the giraffe stretching for that leaf a little bit higher, and every generation they're stretching more and getting a little. That's not how it works. It's randomness in sexual reproduction primarily, that the qualities that are better adapted to the environment, even tiny incrementally, survive. There's so much evidence of this. It's unbelievable, especially on it. And just because we say, I don't know how this occurred, is not evidence of God.
Again, the evidence is there in the micro. I strongly dispute that it's there in the macro. Well, we're out of time, Tim. You'll have to call in earlier, as you said.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
Okay, Bob. My friend, good to talk to you. We'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.